This podcast is sponsored by Skylight Frame. Mother's Day is almost here. What are you getting her? Something that shows you care. Something that makes her feel loved. Something that won't stress you out. Something like the Skylight Frame. The Skylight Frame is the perfect gift. It's a touchscreen photo frame your whole family can upload photos to, from wherever they are in the world. It's a way to share with her all the moments that matter. It sets up in seconds. You can even make sure that it's already loaded with photos when your mom opens her Mother's Day gift. And her Skylight Frame can hold thousands of the treasured photos you share. It's an easy, heartfelt way for mom to stay connected with those who matter most. It really is the perfect gift. Now, as a special Mother's Day offer for our listeners, get 15% off your purchase of a Skylight Frame when you go to skylightframe.com/easy. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME.com/easy. Get 15% off your Mother's Day purchase now at skylightframe.com/easy.
Hey, I'm Sarah. When planning our home birth, my husband Matthew and I were really frustrated by the lack of empowering and honest home birth resources. So we created this podcast to start a new conversation for moms and families like us. This is Doing It at Home. Hey guys, welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast. I don't even know what to do with this intro. I'm going to make it really short and sweet because the episode is a little bit longer, but for great reason, because this episode has so many firsts for the show and it's just packed into this amazing story. So I'm going to say as little as possible and just share with you a few highlights. And that is, we are speaking with Danielle and Michael. And Danielle and Michael are brother and sister. And why this matters to the story is because Michael is a midwife, a male midwife, and he has been Danielle's birth attendant for 2 of her 11 births. So 11 babies, haven't had that on the show before. One of them, home birth, 11-pound, 12-ounce baby. And second home birth, water birth with brother Michael, the midwife birth attendant, as the primary caregiver in that birth. I mean, this episode, you guys, it's just so awesome. There's so many. I mean, I just listed for you a male midwife, 11-pound, 12-ounce baby, 11 births, and 2 of those home births. It's incredible. So just listen in, enjoy. Danielle and Michael were so much fun to talk with, and we're so grateful to them for coming on the show. Here it is. Hi, Danielle and Michael. Welcome to the Doing It at Home podcast.
Thank you.
Hi.
Hi. How are you guys?
We're doing good. A little chilly up here, but doing good.
Great. Awesome. Yeah. Danielle, we were talking before we hit record about the temperatures you are experiencing up in northern Minnesota. And I'm learning so much from you. One, that there's a difference between Minnesota and northern Minnesota, and that there are just temperatures that you are experiencing that I cannot even fathom. So, wow. So this is a first for the show. Actually, there's a lot of firsts for the show in this episode, and I'm just so excited and grateful to both of you for sitting down and talking with me. First of all, you are a brother-sister pair, which we have not had an interview in that fashion before. You know, sometimes we've had mom and dad, or we've had a birth mama and her photographer, but this is a really cool pairing, and we'll get into why, but there's that, and I mean, I guess I'll tease a little bit. A lot of babies going on over there that we're talking about. And then also, Michael, your involvement in some of Danielle's births. So I guess the best way to kick it off, Danielle, could you just tell us a little bit about you and your family? And then, Michael, you can go after and just share, you know, who you are and what you do.
Sure. Yep, that sounds good. We are Tom and Danielle Filipovich, and we actually live on an 80-acre farm that was passed down. We are Tom is third generation on this 80-acre plot. We have milking goats to sustain our our milk consumption, and we make, once in a while, we make yogurt and or ice cream or butter or something like that out of it. We've got 11 children, from six girls and 5 boys. Age ranges right now, almost 21 down to a year and a half. And, yeah, it's, we homeschool, Right now, the kids are off in their own little corner watching your video to keep quiet. They're pretty happy right now. And, just lots of things going on.
Wow. Yeah, covers it, I would say. You know, when you end intro like that, it's just, yeah. That's great.
I don't know what else to say.
Yeah. Well, we're going to get into all of that. Like I said, 11 children and, you know, a couple of them home birth. So we will certainly get into some of those details. So right now, listeners who are like, oh my gosh, I cannot wait to hear the rest of this and where it's going, we're getting there. So Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Sure, I'm Michael Warwood. Danielle and I are 9.5 years apart. I'm obviously the younger one. my wife and I live just half hour from here, also northern Minnesota here, and we also homeschool. We're going to be having our, eighth child, but seventh with us because of our miscarriage. We have probably early March is when ours is coming. And yeah, that's a little bit about me. I got into birth, the journey on that shortened version is that obviously with my own children being born, we had a couple of hospital births and just kind of every time we had a birth plan that wasn't followed and every time we got more and more educated on birth and every time kind of just moved a little bit further and further away from it in some ways and mentally and it ended up with our fourth that we started birthing at home.
Wow.
And it just kind of went from there and I'd always been just studying birth like crazy and then it was Jethro's birth with Danielle here that she asked me to attend the birth. And that's at a point in my life when I was kind of like fighting with the idea of, oh, should I be a birth attendant or midwife or should I not? And no, that's actually just crazy. You're just this is crazy thoughts because who's going to have a guy at birth? So don't even think about that. And kind of went from there, and I just kind of kept fighting myself off of it for a year or two before that. And then her birth with Jethro was like the point that threw me over the edge. I came out of that birth and was like, okay, I'm going to do this. And you know what? There's few people that probably will request a guy midwife, but the ones that do will be the right ones, and the ones that don't, that's all right. I have other midwives I can refer them to. I know several other great birth attendants around here, so we'll go with that. So,
wow.
That's how.
So, I
just kept telling him, that, you know, there's more guy OBs mm-hmm. than there are girls.
Mm-hmm.
So, what would be the difference?
Yeah, it's just, I think it's different in a home birth setting. People are looking, you know, when you say midwife, you think woman.
Even though it's not a specific
term with woman, you know, that's what the term means. It's not a woman specific term, but but people just still think that.
Right.
You know, the first people usually ask me is, oh, so you're a mid husband. And then,
right.
No, that's not the meaning of the word. That's not with that.
Oh my gosh, that's so great. So then do you kind of interchange midwife and birth attendant or do you just, you know, you just go with it and then kind of explain after?
Yeah, it's, you know, I would usually refer to myself as a traditional birth attendant because that's more the model of care that I like to project.
Gotcha.
And so, but, you know, my page says midwife, you know, people call me midwife. It's just easier term for people to remember. I just kind of interchange the terms. And in our state, a birth attendant and a midwife are literally the same thing. They call them both midwife.
Okay. Wow. Yeah. So then what were you doing before that? And how was that transition from whatever your life was before being a midwife?
Well, I'm still doing that too. So I'm not, there's not enough birth volume to switch over at this point.
Got it.
So, Yeah. So I'm doing both things right now. I'm thankful that I have a place that's kind of just flexible enough that I can do both for the small volume that I have at the moment. So.
Gotcha. Great. Okay. Wonderful. Wow. So. Wow. I'm just. There's so much. This is so cool, you guys. Okay, so for you, Danielle, you had almost all of your babies up until Jethro in hospital?
Correct.
Okay, and so then there was something that changed, though, for Jethro when you were pregnant with him. Tell us a little bit about that and why things went a little differently for this one.
Okay, well, I'm gonna back up in history for a little while.
Yes.
With our first one, Marshall, I went into kind of a false labor, and of course, being the first, I thought it was labor, and I went to the hospital, and they said, "Oh yeah, you're in labor. My contractions were there," and then we just kept laboring off and on. But every time I wasn't in motion, like walking or something, they'd put the monitor on me and my contractions would shut down. And then I'd walk again and I'd get them really, you know, getting going and really tough and really strong. And then I'd lay down and they'd quit. And finally, they said, "Well, if you don't, you know, get going, you can just go home at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning." So we were walking in the morning, and just before we got to the door, just before 10 o'clock in the morning, my water broke in the hallway. And they said, "Oh, you're staying." Well, I didn't know a whole lot about birth then. I hadn't researched anything. I was just, you know, doing what the doctors were telling me to do. And I got into the room, and they'd check me. There was monitors all over, and I was hooked up to a bunch of stuff, and as far as they were concerned, you know, they had a timetable, as I learned later over the years, they have a timetable, and they wanted this accomplished. So they told me to walk all day, which I did, and then that night I was supposed to get some rest, because in the morning, if nothing happened, they were going to induce me at 6 o'clock in the morning. Well, they ended up inducing me at 4:30 in the morning, and I had the most horrible Pitocin-induced labor pains that I kind of passed out for 2 hours between 1 and 3 o'clock in the afternoon, because the baby still hadn't come. And well, after 4:30, oh, about 5 o'clock, they said, "Well, if you don't have this baby, you're not dilating. If you don't have this baby, are you still in here? Or, like, almost right now? We're going to do a cesarean." And my husband got pretty panicky. He was pretty panicky anyway, because he joked, I don't know how many of the first births that he joked that he wanted to bring a shovel and label husband scraper on it. Because he figured he was going to be on the floor anyway. But he got on the phone to our church, and they said it was the fastest prayer chain had ever gone around. And 20 minutes later, a different doctor, they had done a shift change, and a different doctor came in, and they said, "I know you were just checked, but I want to check you again." And I said, "That's fine, you know, whatever." And with a pretty amazed expression on her face, after checking me, she said, "I wasn't expecting this. I need a full staff in here immediately." And everybody started shuffling around the room, and she looked at me and she said, "Please don't push. You're at 10 plus 2. It was pretty awesome. But during that Pitocin time, I felt like a caged bird, because I was stuck on the bed on my back with monitors and IVs. And I wasn't allowed to do anything or move, and except just, you know, go through the pain of labor in a not natural position. And so after that, we just, you know, kept going to the hospital for the other births, and that was a 36-hour labor. And the next one was 4, which was really cool. And the next ones were, you know, around 20 or whatever. But I still didn't feel like I was, I don't know. I felt like a caged bird, but I didn't figure that there was any other feeling because I'd never known how it felt to have a home birth or birth the way that I felt like moving. And I didn't even know that there was a different way to birth, really, because I hadn't really, it wasn't a really a subject that I delved into or talked to anybody about. And so when Jethro came around and we got closer and closer to his due date, it was, we were still going to go to the hospital. But then I was talking to my husband, like the last baby, which was Elsa, and she was actually born in the hospital bathroom. which was pretty cool. But that was a birth that was a more natural position. I was in a relatively sitting squatting position, and she came out so wonderful. And so I was sitting farther along with Jethro, and I asked my husband. I said, "I heard about this birthing center. I know you don't really want to do a home birth, but what about a birthing center? Would that be?" And it was down in Duluth. It was an hour. Duluth is an hour away. That's where we always birth. But the birthing center was like not very far in town away from the hospital. And I said, "What do you think about a birthing center? Would that be an okay, like medium for you?" You know, because I wanted to, I guess I tend to kind of make sure he's comfortable during my birth too. But, it's just because it's more stress on me if he's stressing.
Right.
Anyway, so I said, what do you think about that? And he goes, "Well, I suppose we could, you know, try to look at that." And we went and looked, and honestly, it was just with the whole feeling when we walked in the door was just not where we wanted to be. The rooms were immaculate. They were like mini mansion rooms. They're, you know, this is this style, but they were all not like home. And we drove away and we talked it over and we just said, "No, I really don't feel comfortable there at all, and let alone giving birth there." And Tom was his turning point where he said, "You know what, maybe a home birth would be okay." So we got a hold of the midwife that Michael knew, who was 4.5 hours away.
Yeah, she was, about 4.
Maybe 4 hours away in Bemidji. And thrilled to talk to her. She was really, really good about seeing us right away because of how late in the pregnancy I was. And
Well, not just late in the pregnancy, though. We're kind of missing one key detail.
Oh, I missed something. Go ahead. I rewrote some stuff down, but I kind of went blank.
No, that's great. So it's great.
I can jump in anytime you want.
She's getting it out. Just the calling the midwife thing that happened. Like she was already like 41 or 41 plus weeks.
Wow.
At this point.
Oh yeah. And I knew if I went anywhere near a hospital, they were going to cut and corner me right there on the sidewalk.
She was under a lot of pressure from the doctor to be induced, and that's the whole reason. Like I remember her walking out of. I wasn't at the appointment, of course. There, just her and her husband both were. I don't remember, but she came out of the appointment. I don't remember if she called or texted me, but she was just like. I'm not going back in there. Like, I didn't stop at the desk and make an appointment, and I don't want to go back.
I'm never darkening their door again.
Wow.
I was like, I'm not going back. And I said, "Well, here's the number. Call our midwife. I know you're late, but she's awesome. She'll probably take you." Okay, continue.
That's so cool.
Take me, but Michael had checked heartbeats before I went to her appointment. And we were kind of thinking that he was, that Jethro, now I can say that, Jethro 1, was twins because of how he was positioned and the two separate heartbeats that we were finding. And when I went to her, she kind of confirmed that. She was like, yeah, I'm finding two different heartbeats, and I'm feeling these positions that are really different. And we thought, okay. Tom and I looked at each other like, seriously, we're going to have twins? This is going to be crazy. Normally our babies even just go with, you know, a larger pacifier even when they're first born. And so we bought like two little newborn pacifiers and a little bag of newborn diapers, which is not normal for a kid either. and then we waited for twins. And,
wow.
And waited. And people are going, well, why aren't you going in? Why aren't you going in? And I said, how often? And this is really actually a really nice thing. The fact that he wasn't twins was, you know, totally fine with me. but it really helped calm everybody that questioned us over and over and over again for that whole month, questioned our waiting to give birth. And I said, you know, how many twins have the chance to grow more?
Right.
You know, so many twins are taken early. And I said, you know, and it was a nice little, although it was, you know, the wrong information, we didn't realize that. I said, my comeback was always, how many twins have the opportunity to grow more?
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to just let them grow. And when he did finally came, he was only one. And I'll tell you what, he totally rejected the newborn pacifier because he was 12 pounds. I think it was 11 pounds, 12 ounces. And he totally blew out the newborn diaper too.
Ooh, yeah, did not need those.
We've been waiting a month ago, but yeah, that was pretty crazy. But the to get back, I suppose, to the actual birth, it was a water birth. My Michael brought over. What time did I call you?
I want to say it was like 2 o'clock. Yeah, I think it was like 2 o'clock in the morning, or a little before two in the morning.
That sounds right. Yeah, 2 o'clock in the morning. I called him and said, "Okay." I woke up with severe labor pains. Like, okay, this is the real deal.
Mm.
And I was just praising the Lord too that I had slept through whatever else I had gone through already. That was really nice. But he was over at my house within, I think, like 20 minutes. At that time, he only lived 7 miles away. So within a half an hour, he was at my house and setting up the birth pool and checking on me. And we were waiting for the midwife from Bemidji to come because I had called her at the same time. But she had to be on her way. I mean, there was no way she could get here any sooner than, you know, how long it takes to drive 4 hours.
Mm.
And so he was setting up the birth pool and the contractions were getting, you know, more severe. And yeah, I don't even remember what time or what happened with my transition.
Did I mention your birth team?
Oh, my birth team. Yeah, that would be Michael. He was my backup midwife. My mother, who was my backup midwife. And then my two eldest daughters, Mary and Emily, were there for support, you know, the hot water and pictures. My brother, Michael, he's except everything. He's very organized. he handed my daughter, Emily, his phone and said, here, take pictures.
Mm.
And which is awesome, too, because we we're a really conservative family, and I wore a dress the whole time. And anybody, literally anybody, could see my pictures, and I would have no problem with it in any situation, whether it was birthing or not. So that was pretty cool. And she did. She took a lot of pictures. One of the special things about that was after Jethro was born, Michael took all of those pictures and put them in a book for me. So we have play-by-play those 4 hours, which is pretty awesome.
That's amazing.
Yeah, Yeah, it was. It was really cool. And the girls did really well. It was their first being anywhere near any births or
mm-hmm.
anything.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And were the rest of the kiddos sleeping?
Yes. Yes. Which is, God's timing is awesome. Yeah. Slowly just woke up the next morning because he was born at 6 o'clock and he was born at 6 o'clock and all the kids just kind of woke up to him.
Mm.
But which was really just a gentle, cool morning. But anyway, getting back to Jethro's birth, I had never water birthed before.
Mm.
And that in itself was an amazing experience. I didn't think it was going to be that much different than birthing.
Mm.
But the contractions, of course, him being really, really big and the contractions being so strong, I got into the tub after Michael said, okay, the tub is ready. And we didn't want to be in the tub too soon because different things happen. You know, they either, you know, if it's not, you're not far enough along, it kind of slows progression. We wanted the progression to speed up. But it was the perfect timing. Michael was on his stuff. And I got into the pool and I had a contraction like right then. And then I got into the pool and the weight that was lifted off of me and the muscle relaxation instantaneously, I turned to my husband between contractions and I said, if we get pregnant, if and when we get pregnant again, we're pushing the buy now button. You know, I want a birthing pool of my own.
That's so cute.
This is Michael's birth pool. I thought, no, I want one.
Yeah, yeah.
And he just smiled like, you know, okay, whatever you say at this point. And, but then the next contraction I assumed was going to be, you know, less, but that was the moment also that my body said, okay, now we're going to kick in and do this. And whoa, yeah, they got worse.
Oh.
And, which was good. We knew the progress was, going to be better, but yeah, the contractions were worse. But with Elsa's birth, the previous birth, I had been reading birthing books per Michael's suggestion because I had still not a whole lot, you know, to do with my birth. I was just birthing my kids, not really paying attention and researching. But before Elsa's birth, I had read a book that Michael had suggested. Which one was it? I can't remember.
Anime's Guide to Childbirth.
Oh, great.
Yeah, Anime's Guide to Childbirth. And in one of the stories, she had had a birthing mother kiss her husband because of the connection between the open mouth, not a huge, you know, massive slobbery kiss, but open mouth and open cervix.
Yeah.
And that...
The whole mouth, cervix, throat, cervix, you know, the connection between keeping relaxed.
Sure.
Yep. And I did not realize what a connection that was.
Mm.
It was crazy. And I could tell that helped with Elsa's birth. It took, even though the contractions are really hard and, you know, painful and stuff, it took the really sharp peak off.
Mm-hmm.
If Tom kissed me at contraction, during the contraction, and then as soon as the contraction was going down, we, you know, quit kissing, that was fine. And that's one of the things that I really commend my husband for, because he's not a public kisser.
Mm.
And when we were at the hospital with Elsa, there were some issues with the nurses and them being kind of putzes. And we were birthing, to back up, sorry, we were birthing in, not birthing, we were going through contractions. We were laboring a little bit in the family room because I didn't want to be hooked up. I wanted to postpone that as long as possible. The nurse came in and said, so what's going on? And I thought, she was going on. And we told her, and she left. She came back shortly after and said, you to register or leave.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, I thought, what? And she goes, it's, you know, it has to do with, you know, hospital policy.
Liability.
Liability. And I thought, there is no way I'm being hooked up yet. You're not going to be poking me and prodding me and putting wrapping monitors on me. Because those monitors, you know, they look, you know, they've got the little elastic on them. They're painful.
Mm.
I really have liked them. They've always been painful. And so my husband did not like that. We went out kind of in a huff. And we didn't leave her in a huff. We said we'd decide, and then she walked away, and then we left. But we only got as far as the – we were kind of sneaky. We went as far as the elevator. Next to the elevator was a little cubby with a couple chairs. And we stopped there to – because I was going through more contractions. And we ended up just staying there for a little while longer until we registered. But him kissing me every time, and he did. But when we got into the room, was the first time that the nurses were around during a contraction. And I just closed my eyes and I thought, okay, you know, the nurse is here. You know, I'm not going to get my kisses anymore, and this is going to be painful. I'm just going to have to, you know, suck it up, buttercup. and I closed my eyes, and he knew, because I had my eyes closed, that I was having a contraction. Right away, I could feel his lips on mine, and it was so wonderful to have not only that kiss, but that support.
Yeah. Wow, way to go, Tom. That's awesome.
Yeah, exactly. But during Jethro's, now we're going to fly again to Jethro's birth, he kissed me every contraction. He said, you know what? He said, I'm going to be here for you. Everybody else is here for your support and what you physically. He said, I'm going to be here the whole time. I'm not going to leave your side. I'm not going to go, you know, like get a cup of coffee. I'm not going to, you know, whatever. And he was there the whole laboring time. He never left my side.
Mm.
And that was awesome. That was really awesome. And he was there for every kiss, even though it was, you know, it's a strange kiss because you're going through a severe amount of pain, and you know the kiss is going to help, but it's not a romantic kiss. This is almost work.
Give me your lips.
Yes, give me your lips. This is, and I was shaking too, and so I felt bad for him. I even told him close to the end. I was like, "You're never going to want to kiss me again." I said, "I'm probably going to be up on my like kissing bank." I said, "You're not going to kiss me for weeks." And he said, no, that's not true. And that was a funny moment there.
Wow, that is funny. So I'm curious then, for you, Michael, Jethro's birth, you know, you mentioned earlier it was kind of a turning point for you, and it was really pivotal as far as, you know, your movement into this work. At this point, had you and your wife had your home births yet?
Yeah, let's see which ones we had had. We had had both Zeb and Pearl. Yeah, we had had two home births before.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay, cool. So you had, you know, been a part of home birth and that experience. Yeah, because I was curious how the timeline went, you know, which one of you entered into home birth first. So it makes sense that it was you, Michael. And so then how was it for you being in Jethro's birth in that kind of capacity and supporting your sister, and what was that like for you?
I'm going to bump in here real quick.
Yeah.
I want him to tell this part of my birth story, and that is that Jethro had shoulder dystocia right at the end.
Yeah, and we've heard a little bit about that on the show, and it just does not, it sounds like no joke.
It's no joke, but it's actually no biggie if you know what you're doing, and he did.
So that's great.
That's part of it, too.
Sure, I can go into that. So, yeah, now I'm not sure about it, and I forgot Sarah's question here. But,
sorry.
but yeah, for the experience for me, for Jethro's birth and the turning point, yeah, I think that's where we were at. Yeah.
Yes.
But anyway, it was pretty awesome. I mean, we were at that point when she called in the middle of the night. She'd had who knows how much contraction during her, during the sleep. And then she woke up like in hard labor and called everybody. And we all came here. My mom and I were here like super quick, of course, because we live close. The midwife, we texted her a couple of updates as things went along, but she was just so far away that it was funny because back up to before the birth, we were encouraged. Tom was worried about how far away she was. And right. we were trying to tell him, like, oh, come on. Danielle's shortest birth she's ever had was 4 hours, and she lives 4 hours away. So, you know, chances are she'll be fine, right? And then, as it turned out, it really did happen that the midwife did not make it in time.
So, he actually got here half an hour after he was born.
Yeah, it just so happened that that particular night when we called her, she was actually an hour further away than usual because she'd stayed overnight at her parents' house, maybe after other births she'd attended or something, I'm not sure, but she had ended up crashing the night at her parents' house and was even further away. So, yeah.
Anyway, so
we went along in this birth. You know, I just kind of left Danielle and Tom alone in their room. And I was just kind of heading the birth pool filling kind of thing. I was, you know, I was kind of designating a lot of the jobs, keeping the projects moving, like having my mom was like, okay, heat up some pots of water. And my mom was on that, and having my nieces do some things. And we were just kind of setting up the birth area which was in the bathroom that adjoined their room. But there was also another door of the bathroom that went into the main living area. So we were kind of like working from that door, and they were connected to the other door. And so we were kind of just leaving them alone, and except for the times that Tom would come in and be like, I think she's close. She's going to have the baby. and I'd go over there and sit by Danielle and just like watch her for a few seconds. And I'm like, you're not super close, right? Yeah. She'd like shake her head. No. She's like, no, I'm fine. And so then I go back, and it's awesome though. Tom gets so excited. And I think it's really cool actually. Like it makes him a bit nervous, but the excitableness, you know he's looking forward to this baby coming so much. And it's so cool. But he does get just all the, you know, the anxiousness gets a little high, and he thinks the baby's coming right now. So we were just kind of doing that, letting them labor in their room, and it got to the point where she's going to go in the pool. I'm trying to remember if the midwife actually, when I texted the midwife about that, if she actually said, "Oh, hold off on the pool as long as you can," you know, and I was like, "We can't."
Yeah.
So she got in the pool, and I think after that, we probably didn't even text the midwife anymore, sadly, because just we didn't have much time or anything. But, yeah, so let's see. She got in the pool. I handed the phone to Emily for the pictures. She was just kind of laboring, laying back most of the time, and kind of sitting, laying back kind of position. And her belly was sticking up above the level of the water just a little bit. Mm-hmm. That's part of the thing I remember because my mom was just had a bowl there and was like just gently, quietly dipping water and pouring it on her belly to keep her belly as warm as the rest of the, the body. And we probably should have had the pool level a little higher, but she was doing that, and Tom was kneeling next to the first pool. They were doing their kissing thing, and I was just basically standing there with gloves on, just like watching. I wasn't really doing anything, honestly, which is kind of just really the model of birth that I...
Right.
That I go for is to not do anything. unless you absolutely have to. I mean, another thing that, you know, people can think was weird, obviously, because what, your brother was at your birth?
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that, you know, when they think midwife, they're thinking cervical checks and whatever. And I'm like, you know what, honestly, and I don't even believe in those almost, you know, it's like, we didn't do any of that. And I've only had like one person that I've helped with birthing so far, of, you know, fairly small number, of course, so far, but still, because I'm a beginner, but still, I've only had one person so far that's actually asked and insisted, like, I want to know how many centimeters.
Right.
Because I'm not into that unless there's a real reason. And for there to be a real reason for that, to me, is, you know, pretty much almost nil. So,
yeah.
Anyway, so we were going along, and I was just kneeling next to the pool and watching things happen. And, things were progressing well. It was kind of interesting because, I know this is going to sound kind of hokey, but it's like when I'm watching her birth, and I experienced this with my wife too, and with one of the other births that I helped, not all of them, but a few of the births, I kind of feel like as though I'm watching the baby come through the birth canal the whole time. Like, I'm just, all I'm doing is watching her and her movements and mm-hmm. her noises, and, you know, but I just, it's like I'm visioning and the baby coming through, and it's just like, I just feel like I know where the baby is the whole time, even though I'm not checking.
Mm.
And it just, it's kind of an odd kind of tingly feeling, and it makes it sound really healthy.
That's but awesome. Yeah, just, no, we love that here. It's like your baby spidey senses or something.
Yeah, it's just yeah. The vibes are just good. I don't know. You know?
That's awesome.
So we're just the baby's coming through, and
remember, I'm still in my little black dress.
Right.
Anyway, so my mom's pouring the water on the belly, and I'm just watching, and we got to one point where the head was starting to emerge. And of course, this was, you know, this is the turning point birth for me. I wasn't really helping people with their births at this point. So I was very much a beginner in this at this point.
Mm.
And but the head started to emerge, and of the baby's head that I've seen emerge up till then, I had never seen this, of course, it's just my wife's baby. And there was this weird, like, the water was kind of ripply, but I could see through the water that there was this, like, lumpy, like, curled, you know, stripe across the baby's head. And I was like, oh my goodness, I can't believe, you know, the cord, is that the cord? And I didn't say anything, and Danielle's eyes were closed the whole time. I didn't say anything. I just motioned to my mom, and she stopped the water pouring, and I took a second look, and oh, whoops, it's like the curdling of the baby's head. Like the skin is like pushed up into this wrinkle on the baby's scalp. And everything's totally fine. And I'm like, I totally know what that is. Like, I was having a little lapse there for a second. So I motion, and she starts pouring the water back again. But then as soon as the baby's head got all the way out, it was like, it was a real slow emergence of the head.
Mm.
And I was just thinking, like, wow, that's a really decent-sized head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. She's still thinking twins at this point.
At the time, we were still kind of thinking that. And then, and just as the head came out, then he did his quarter turn, as all babies do. And it was just kind of a slow quarter turn. Like it was almost like he was doing this little shoulder dance or something, you know, and he was just slowly doing his quarter turn. oftentimes you don't even notice that quarter turn. I mean, when the baby's head comes out, it's like, boom, the rest of the body comes out, you know? And so he did his quarter turn, and I felt like it was a locking key. Like, as soon as he got, like, into that spot, it was like, I was like, what was that? Like, I think you suck. Like it was just like, I felt in the same second that I felt like he might be stuck, or is he stuck, was like the same moment and breath that my sister started going, oh no, something's wrong, I need help, can you help me?
Oh,
like,
wow.
She's such a quiet birther. She has been like so quiet, and like you wouldn't hardly know she's in labor except that there's a baby sticking out. and like, she is so quiet like the entire time. And then all of a sudden she starts like almost yelling, like, I need help. I don't know what it is. Like, something's wrong. And is there something you can do? And yes, you're okay. Everything's going to be good. We just need you to turn over to your hands and knees so I can help you. And I didn't say what it was. I just said, yeah, you need to turn over so we can help you. And she, a split second, she's like, I can't do that.
I'm a big girl.
And she's like, and my mom and Tom helped her turn over to her hands and knees. And really quickly. I mean, you know, it takes so much longer to tell the story than what actually happened. It's all within a few seconds, probably. And she turned over, and I put my, I don't remember, one or two fingers in to the baby's shoulder that was behind the pubic bone area, and lifted the shoulder over that pubic bone, and her, you know, that's when you're on your hands and knees, the opening, the birth canal opening is a bit more elongated, a bit more oval shaped, you know? So as soon as I turned her over, and then I popped that shoulder over the pubic bone and her tailbone, you could just see like the shape of her skin, you know, as I pulled the baby over that. It just like he came way up over it. Like, his shoulder was completely locked behind there. And, you know, so many shoulder dystocias really aren't anything of a big deal. A sticky shoulder, or, you know, the mom repositions a little bit and the baby falls out, it's usually not a big deal, honestly. But I felt like this one really was a big deal. Like, it was what you'd call a complete shoulder dystocia, or
he was big, and his shoulder was completely locked behind my pelvic bone.
So, wow.
Yeah.
Danielle, what were you feeling when you... When you said, you know, something's wrong, you know, I need your help, what were you experiencing? What were you feeling to know that something was off? You know, you've given birth a few times, so I'd imagine you know.
Yeah, I was actually going to butt in and say something about that right now. It's cool that you asked. Thank you. we've got the mindset of twins, and Michael's looking at his head going, wow, that's, you know, pretty big kid. And my brain is still, I have no clue how big or small this baby is. I haven't seen his head. I'm a big girl, and I couldn't see anything over the belly. I could feel his head, you know, because he's out. But at that point, his entire body, being almost 12 pounds, was just literally writhing inside of me. And I've had, you know, births, and I know what it feels like to have, you know, baby kind of just, you know, flip out and stuff like that. You don't notice as much the baby's body because everybody's, you know, looking at the head and everybody's, you know, baby comes out. That's fine. But his whole body inside me was like, something's wrong. I need to get out. And he started kicking and squirming like he was really being just spastic inside.
Wow.
And that was a really strange feeling for me. And him being so big, I mean, it was painful for him to be kicking like that.
And even though his head was still, this sleepy birthing baby, because, you know, his lungs are still compressed, he's still totally safe, and he's not, trying to breathe air yet, but his body knew that, something was up.
Right.
So that was a crazy, crazy feeling.
Jeez. I think it's kind of a cool moment of, you kind of think about it, that, babies, for the most part, babies know what they're doing.
Right.
It's like he's stuck there, but he's wiggling to try and get out. Like, he knows all of a sudden he's stuck, and he's like, he's going to writhe a little bit and try to make it through. That's kind of my thought on that. But he just needed that little shoulder lift, and he popped right out. And, it kind of, in a way, it feels like it's a big deal, because it was what I would really think of as a complete dissociative, but at the same time, it took a few seconds. If you know what to do, it's better than, all of her other births, except one, were on her back in the hospital, and what would they have done there? She would have had an enormous episiotomy, most likely.
Ooh, yeah.
And or maybe they would have broken the baby's collarbone, which is another technique that they do in the hospital for live babies to correct a shoulder dysplasia. But we're really glad to not have to do any of those things.
Absolutely.
Yeah, he's a very, very happy baby. There was no, besides that swimming point, there was no trauma for him really during his birth, except for that one moment. But there was no pain involved for me to project to him or him himself.
Mm.
Yeah, he came out a little bit purple, but not bad at all. I mean, he picked up quickly and just normally. He was really good.
One of the funny things about the rest of his birth travel was when after Michael fixed the shoulder dystocia and he came out and he caught him, and I was still on my hands and knees at that point, and I felt that baby body rush. It was like, oh, and I said, oh, let me see my baby. And Michael quietly and calmly said, no, you still have to push out the legs. And my brain is saying, who pushes out legs?
Wow.
I was not about to pull any part of this baby out. The baby's going to come out.
Yeah.
Or with self-pushing. Like, I'm not, like, I know it's just legs. So you're going to
one little push of the legs will come out. But because of how we let Jethro come out on his own, and how gentle and kind of knowing Michael was during the birth to do that, another little backstory with all my other births, I have bled afterwards profusely for months on end. I think the longest I bled was 5 months.
Wow.
And that might have been my first. But
they were all 3 months or more, right?
Yeah, they were all over 3 months of bleeding.
Wow.
And thankfully, I'm a person that has naturally high iron. I eat a lot of protein and yeah, I like my protein. But even the doctors would say, no, we want you to take these iron pills. And I'd come back and I'd go, wow, your iron is really good. You've been taking your pills. And I'd just smile. I don't take iron pills. I do not take them. I just, eat my protein. But with after Jethro's birth, because of, how naturally it was able to, he was able to come, and there was no pulling of the placenta to check to see how attached it still was and different things like that, that I didn't even realize the doctors were doing to me, because that's the way they worked. Oh, let's check it. Give it a little, tug. Oh, no, it's still attached. Well, give me a push and, all that stuff, forcing it out. I bled for like only 6 or 8 weeks.
Wow.
And I literally, I don't know how many times I told Michael, I'm like, wow, this is so amazing. And I'm thinking, how many sisters would talk to their brothers about how long they've bled after birth?
I know, that's so, so do your other brothers feel left out at any point, that they're not a part of conversations around placenta and dilation?
No. No, they do not feel left out at all.
Oh, man. Well, that's
no,
good.
To each his own on that one. But Michael did such an amazing job that I felt like a totally...
Your body did amazing.
Yeah. My body did an amazing job, whatever. But we let it and do what it's supposed to do, but not too soon. We didn't force it to do anything. And I felt so good. I mean, it was physically, I felt so good that I just was on cloud nine, that I was...
I remember there were several points in her postpartum where she actually thought she was done bleeding already, like at 2.5 weeks or at 4 weeks, or she's like, I think I might be done. And then, you know, it would kind of, probably because she overdid it, it was starting again. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, maybe like she says her total was 6 to 8 weeks, but really the whole postpartum bleeding was so much better than she'd experienced the heavy... bleeds from her other
and it was pretty heavy before. It was months of heavy bleeding. It was bad.
Yeah, I guess that's kind of a big thing for me is the placenta. Like, I kind of rant about that a lot in the birth world. Like you don't pull the placenta out. This is from personal experience, which I won't get into any of my wife's stories here, but that's kind of a thing with me is like, you leave the placenta alone. Mm-hmm. I would suggest people who are interested in reading about that, they look up some Gloria LeMay's information. You know, it's okay for a placenta to come out right away if it's detaching on its own.
Mm-hmm.
But don't force it out. Don't pull it out. Don't even put a little traction on the cord and check it. And, you know, if you want to know if the placenta is already detached or not, don't give it a pull. Maybe have the mom get up on her knees on the bed and do a little squat and give a little gentle push. And if it comes, then you know it was detached. And if it doesn't come, well, you need a little longer.
And that's exactly what we did for Jethro's. And it was cool because I'd never had the feeling of it just coming on its own.
Oh.
I'd always been told to push it out. And you know, give a little tug, and they, you know, help me, and they were pressing on my belly painfully, and it was not a bad experience. Okay, it was just bad. But with Jethro's, for it to, you know, they said, okay, just, you know, sit up and see if it comes, and there was a contraction feeling all of a sudden, because before that I really didn't have a lot of contraction feelings, and it was just a weird kind of, you know, after pains or whatever, but to have that placenta just literally come out on its own with a natural, non-forced contraction was just an amazing feeling too. Yes, it hurt, but it was still a really cool feeling compared to my other literally 9 births.
Wow, that's really powerful.
And after that birth, I'd also told her, you know, every time you use the bathroom, poke your belly, like, find your uterus and, like, massage and poke your belly a little bit while you're on the toilet. Just do just a tiny bit of a massage each time you sit on the toilet. And that will help your uterus to get down to its normal size much quicker. And so she did that. And, you know, another funny thing about that is her last several births, or kind of her last many births, the doctors had told her she had a lazy uterus or an oversized uterus or however you want to term it there. And, cause she always measured ahead, even though she only had one baby, she always measured large. And after Jethro's birth, then she got pregnant with Gloria and she didn't measure large anymore. And I feel like, you know, I think all that extra massage after the birth and get that uterus down to where it should be and not have the scarring of the placenta being pulled out, and just a combination of all those factors, I think really helped her uterus to just become normal again after 10 births.
Wow.
But it became back to what it should be again.
Yeah, and 11 births, I would say there's nothing wrong with your uterus, Danielle. I mean, it clearly... I wouldn't put any adjective in front of it other than awesome, amazing, abundant. I mean, I think your uterus is cool.
It seems to be fine and dandy and healthier after these last two home births than it has literally ever been.
That's amazing. Can we talk about 11th birth and second home birth? And did you know then after Jethro's birth that you were definitely going to go home birth for any other future babies?
Oh, for sure.
That's awesome.
Yep, for sure. And Tom was totally on board with that, and which was awesome too. And yeah, it was the only way we're going to go. In fact, the way I told Michael that I was pregnant with our 11th, with Gloria, the morning that I took the test, and we didn't tell like everybody that same day, but I did with him just because it's part of Michael and I's relationship.
Yeah.
And we've had a really cool brother-sister relationship all this time, and he's very, very professional when it comes to the birth, but we also have, you know, that sibling, you know, relationship going on at the same time, which is awesome. I mean, that whole scenario is really, really cool. But he's extremely professional as far as, you know, the birthing, but then he's really personal, you know, at the same time to me during the birth and stuff. But what I did was I told, you know, Tom and I hugged, and we're like, oh, we're gonna, you know, have another baby, and I took a picture of the pregnancy test, and I sent it to him, and I said, does this count as my first appointment? And, you know, because I knew that I was just going to have Michael be my midwife and not Rebecca this time. He was closer, and, you know, it worked out so fantastic the last time that I was just like, yeah, this is it. But I said, does this count as my first appointment? And his response was, a little stinker, he goes, where did you get that?
I thought you were listening.
He thought I was faking. So, yeah, literally, Jethro and Gloria were 2 years apart, you know, by just little, just a couple weeks. Mm-hmm. A week. I think it was a week. They were a week apart. A week. The birthdays in December are a week apart, but they're 2 years apart.
Mm.
So, yeah. Wow. Yeah, he thought I was faking it.
Yeah, so going into that second birth there, just want to mention, like, she switched over to me, and it really was mostly because, well, I was closer, and we had such an awesome relationship, and definitely nothing against the other midwife, because she is completely awesome.
Oh, like, yeah, Rebecca.
I just want to throw that in there, because Rebecca is so awesome, and I recommend people to her all the time.
Mm.
Yeah.
So she's a really awesome midwife. She came in time to Jethro's birth. She got there in time for the placenta delivery, but she did miss the birth. But, you know, she would have done the exact same thing as me. She's well-versed in a lot more techniques than I am, probably.
Oh, yeah.
Especially at that point.
Yeah.
She's really awesome. But
yeah, I'm Jethro's officially, and technically it was, you know, her birth or whatever, and she wasn't there for the actual birth, but, you know, it was her baby. And so he's on record as her heaviest birth, which is really cool. But
yeah, going into the next birth,
the next pregnancy, yeah.
Just had me as the quote midwife, and that was my first. She's my first, right?
I think so. Yeah.
I think. I mean, besides my own.
No, Jethro was your first.
Well, I mean,
the one that you call your own.
Gloria was the first one that I actually, like, recorded the birth with the state and got the birth certificate. You know, that's
that's exciting.
Yeah.
So that was kind of cool. And Rebecca, being the awesome birth attendant midwife that she is, she helped me get set up for that. And because there's a certain amount of, like, they didn't even know, like, are you for real? You're sending your stuff to the state, but she backed me up, and that was awesome. And yeah, Gloria was the first one that I recorded with the state. But her birth was really straightforward. It was an awesome water birth, and this time in a stock tank. And
I had to Google that, by the way. Being from Fort Lauderdale, Florida, I don't know what that is.
A stock tank. This particular one was a Rubbermaid brand stock tank. A stock tank is just a container for water. for feeding stock, like horses or cattle.
Right.
Things like that. And so what we did, though, because, you know, it's such hard rubber and there's three ridges inside to stabilize it so it's, you know, sturdy enough to hold 100 gallons of water or 150 gallons of water is, I think, what this one was. There's ridges in there, and I thought, well, I want to make it softer, but I don't want anything to get wet.
Mm-hmm.
So we lined it with quilts in on the inside and kind of taped them over so they wouldn't fall down. And then we put plastic inside on top of the quilt and then taped that on the outside so it wouldn't fall down. And so when you filled it up with water, it was still, you know, the shape of the sock tank, but I had that quilting for cushion. So I wasn't against hard ridges.
That's great. And, that's so smart.
It was really cool. And the plus side of that is, you know, it was cheaper than, of course, because I already own stock tanks because I have of animals. I didn't have to buy a birthing pool. And cleanup was, well, you bail out the stock tank and then throw the plastic away.
There you go. Really look at you guys. Water birth hacks.
Yeah. It was great. Because one of the things was I felt awful because for Jethro's birth, we found out that there was a leak in Michael's birthing pool and contaminated water got inside some of the baffles and the tubes. And it literally had to be thrown away because it could not be cleaned.
Yeah, as soon as she stepped out of it, like, it started leaking while they were, right at that moment or while they were taking the water out. So it got into the walls of the pool. So
And it wasn't leaking out. I mean, it didn't, like, leak all over my bathroom. It leaked internally into all the air tubes. So that was a bummer. But, Gloria's birth was pretty uneventful. My birth team for that one was Michael, of course, as the midwife, and my mom was there. But then we also had a young lady who was interested in birth, and she was engaged to be married. And
no,
not at that point.
No, because she actually got pregnant during the pregnancy. They were already married. Or
no?
Oh no, they got married while you were pregnant.
Yeah,
right.
They got married.
She was pregnant at the end.
Yeah, she got married. She got married a few weeks before I gave birth, but she was interested in the whole birthing thing because her mom had had a few home births. In fact, I think one was a truck birth. but she was there, and then also of course, Mary and Emma, my daughters, and that was me because she had Kaylee had come to a couple of my appointments, and she just thought it was just really amazing because she hadn't been to any of her mom's appointments. But to just learn more and Michael thought, oh, this would be a really good one. Danielle would be a good one for her to learn from too, because, you know, she's like, yeah, whatever, you can measure me. You can check heartbeats for 20 minutes. It doesn't matter. You can. And then I was a really quiet birther too. So he thought that would be really good for Kaylee to see, you know, before she got married and
see a gentle home birth. You're trying to introduce yourself to home birth.
yeah. But hers, I don't know, really, it was just a water birth. My transition, it was pretty much the same thing. 2 o'clock in the morning, around 2:30 in the morning, maybe I called Michael and we were filling the birthing pool and, around, I don't know what time it was. I think it was about 45 minutes before she was born. I think she was born at 6:30. About quarter to six, I threw up. And I was like, oh, crud, I don't like throwing up. I rarely it takes a lot for me to throw up. And I was like, oh, I was mad at myself. And then, of course, you're puking in front of people, which is an embarrassing / awkward thing to do, I think. But Michael's like, okay, time to get in the tub. And he recognized that as, okay, you're transitioning. Now you're ready for the tub. So, but he was really calm about it. He didn't say, okay, that's officially a transition. We need to get to the tub. He was just all like, okay, I think we can go to the tub now and it's ready. And And it's like, no biggie. It's like, this happened at the same time, you know, coincidentally. No. it was the time to go in. And it was pretty cool. I kind of labored relatively on my back in the water, of course, so it doesn't really feel like you're laying on the back on your back. There's not a lot of pressure on the spine or the tailbone. And Kaylee and Michael were both at the bottom of the tub, so she was able to see Gloria's head come out under the water and make that quarter turn. And Michael was kind of whispering to her, "Oh, see, that's the quarter turn. Do you see it?" And then she, I don't know.
Yeah, we were just kind of quietly standing there, but I was just really quietly whispering to, so that hopefully Danielle wouldn't hear or be disturbed by it. Just kind of letting Kaylee know, like, "Oh, there, this is having, oh, the head's emerging. Come over here." And then she, you know, just got to watch the birth. And baby, and Danielle didn't want to. It was funny because we talked about this ahead of time. I'm like, I kind of encourage people to catch their own baby. Mm. But Danielle didn't want to. She's like, "No, I'm going to be, I already know I'm probably going to be reclined back. And I just hand the baby to me."
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what she wanted. And so, you know, we were just at the bottom end of the tub there. And I just reached in and put the baby up on her chest. And she had, her and Tom had their amazing moments there. Just, she's here.
Well, baby is here. We didn't even know if it was a girl or a boy because we don't peek at ultrasounds or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
So we were holding her for a while, and I'm like, "Oh, wait a minute. I'd like to know what baby is." So, "Oh, it's a girl." And then, you know, hug her again. And it was kind of comical. Kaylee, just the miracle of birth, Kaylee was just really, really happy to be there. And later on, after she had, when she was going through labor, her mom mentioned to me later, she goes, "Yeah, Kaylee was going through labor." And she goes, "I don't think I'm doing as well as Danielle."
Oh.
And I thought, "Oh, don't compare. Everybody's totally different."
Absolutely.
But she had an amazing gift too. And it was pretty cool, but I'm really glad that she got to be there. And just, you know, kind of have an idea of what, you know, maybe even what she was going to go through. Cause for me, for my first birth, you know, I knew baby was going to come out, but I'd never seen a birth. I would never talked about birth or anything, but I definitely believe in, you know, hands-on learning and stuff like that. That's one of the reasons we homeschool. But for Emily's birth, the one that my fourth birth at the hospital, I had a teacher at the local college come in and say, "I see you're birthing. We have some students here, and I was wondering if, you know, two students could come in and watch you labor. I've got, you know, a few students here, well, 13 students, I found out altogether later, that were there for 3 days, and none of them had been able to be there for anybody's birth because, you know, for some one reason or another, none of the paired off people, paired off students had been able to witness a birth. And I said, "Well, yeah, sure, bring them in. It's fine." And so they came in all quiet and shy, and they stood at the wall at the end of the bed. And you know, I said, "You can ask me any questions." I said, "But I just asked if I, when I close my eyes, that you be quiet when I close my eyes. Since I'm having a contraction, and I'd appreciate you not talking." And I said, "Oh, okay." You know, they didn't talk a whole lot anyway, so that wasn't a big deal there. But pretty soon, the teacher came back in again, and she said, "Well, I've got two more students who was watching a mother, and, you know, that didn't work out. Can they come in too?" I said, "Oh, yeah. No problem."
Wow.
And so they crept in, and they were standing at the end of the bed, and it was kind of funny. They were, you know, asking really, really, they weren't really asking any questions at all. And the questions they were asking were very, very simple questions that even I would have known before I gave birth to my first one. And pretty soon the teacher comes in again,
And she goes, it's really not working out. You seem to be the closest to giving birth before we have to leave. Would you mind terribly if the other students came in? And I said, no, that's fine. At that point, I didn't know how many there were. I said, oh, that's totally fine. And all of a sudden, then I had 13 students in the room. And at one point, one of the girls had come up, and I said, you guys can touch my belly if you want. And we're just chatting it up between contractions. And one of them had her hand on my belly, feeling baby kind of move. And I closed my eyes, and she just left her hand there.
Mm.
And it was during a contraction, and I opened my eyes again. And she leaned over and really quietly said, did that hurt? Me being a quiet laborer, and yes, it was very, very painful. But I just looked at her and I said, yes. Just like, oh my goodness, what? You haven't learned squat yet. I mean, you're in school and you haven't even learned that a contraction is painful? Oh, I just didn't believe it. But, they were pretty excited because I did actually give birth just moments before they had to all shuffle out. They didn't get to actually see anything because of the birthing team from the hospital, but they were in the room and they got to hear baby cry, and they just thought that was amazing. I think they got to really like peek over doctor's shoulder and see baby on me, but yeah.
That is something. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah, it was pretty cool.
So I'd like to know, I'm curious, What you appreciate about having the home birth experience for your most recent two babies, either things that you didn't get to experience before in the hospital, or just what were things that, you know, moving into the stage of having your babies at home, did you like the most or appreciate, or, you know, something to that degree?
Well, one of the things I appreciated the most, I don't know if I can, they're all really big things to me because of what a caged bird I felt like.
Right.
In the hospital.
Right.
With Elsa's birth, the one before we came home, you know, the doctor had come in and I had told my husband, before we had talked about it, I said, I don't want to be hooked up to a monitor and I don't want to be hooked up to an IV. And I said, I need you to back me on that. And he said, yes, I can do that. And we got to there. The doctor said, I want to monitor you. It's company policy. It's the hospital policy. And I want to give you an IV. And I said, I don't want a monitor. And I looked at my husband, like, back me up here. And he looked at the doctor and he looked at me and he said, well, you know, honey. And I thought, crud, I'm going to have to be my own advocate here. He's being a stalker. So I looked at her and I said, you got 20 minutes. I said, I'll give you 20 minutes. That's it. And I did 20 minutes on the monitor. She came back in right on 20 minutes. And I said, good, I can get this off. And she said, no, you moved. And I said, no, you take it off. And I don't recall it. Whether she did take it off and I ended up with 10 more minutes or if I was able to take it off. But then the doctor came in later and she was not happy with me because I'd been dealing with the nurse mostly before that. The doctor came in and said, I want an IV. And I said, I don't want an IV. And I looked at my husband like, come on, back me on this. And he looked at the doctor and the doctor was pretty forthright. And he looked back at me and he said, well, you know, honey. And I was like, oh, serious? I'm in labor and I have to okay, but he's still kissing me, so I'm giving him that. I turned back to the doctor and I said no IVs, and she said no, it's, you know, it's hospital whatever, and she was being very, very pushy. And because of what we went through with my daughter Hannah, hospital stays and whatnot, I won't go into that. I knew the term. I was like, tell you what. I said, I will not take an IV. I said, but I will agree to a port. I said, you can poke me with a needle and tape it down to my hand, and it's not hooked up to anything.
Gotcha.
Well, that's what I meant. That's what I meant, she said. And I thought,
baloney. So we did that, and of course it stung the whole time, which I was not happy about. It's just distraction and extra pain.
Right.
But the things about coming home was that that monitor, you know, it's got a nice elastic on it or whatever, but it's always been painful to me. I don't know why, the tight thin skin on my belly or whatever, the monitor has always been painful. And to have that little thing on, and then the IVs have been painful, and I really appreciated being home and not dealing with that. I appreciated not dealing with the nurses coming and going. I appreciated just the home environment of this is not a room. You know, I'm relatively comfortable in different places. I don't have to, you know, I don't get nervous necessarily about being in different rooms, but I did like the fact that, you know, being home, you're in, you know, your walls.
Right.
I mean, it does sound funny, but you know your walls. You
I like that.
And Tom has been there for every birth, which has just been awesome. But to have a place that, you know, he's comfortable in too, and like I said, not having the nurses coming and going and poking and prodding at you and asking you questions and turning on lights and, you know, I can totally labor and birth in bright lights. That's fine. But for them to be, you know, coming in and turning them down and coming in and turning them on, you know, just feeling like, well, like I said before, over and over, a caged bird.
Right.
And I didn't feel like, I did not have any of that feeling when I was home. It was just a loving environment that I chose for myself. This is where I want to birth. These are the people that I want surrounding me. And then both of my home births, the timing for the kids, the rest of the children in the house to wake up and come say hi to mommy and daddy and baby was just priceless.
Yeah. Wow. You guys, this has been so amazing. One thing I want to note too, because I don't know if we have Danielle, is with Gloria's birth, how old were you at Gloria's birth? Given, were you like 42, 43?
44.
Wow, so you were 44 when Gloria was born.
Gloria's due. No, it was just days before I turned 44.
Wow.
Not 43.
Yeah, you were 42, but days before turning 43.
Yeah.
So that's something too that I don't think we've had on the show is as a mom giving birth in 40s. But I think that's amazing because for so many women, and to have a home birth too, like the fear conversation around that, or just the one around even having a child around that age, for some women, they feel that's not in the cards for them or whatnot. And then, you know, to go on with a home birth too. So I mean, I'm going to have to write down and tally up the list of things that we have hit in this episode that we have not done in this show before, because there's so many, from the number of children to a male midwife, a male brother midwife, 11-pound, 12-ounce baby. This is, you guys, I don't even know what I'm going to call this episode.
I wanted to note one funny thing about Tom, too, is that you know, she's talking about the things he was having trouble backing up with in the hospital, but he was so nervous originally about home birth in general.
Mm-hmm.
And when with Jethro's birth, his plan was that, well, what if we have to go to the hospital?
Right.
That was his big thing. He was so nervous. Well, what if? And he agreed to it, and he was okay with it. He completely agreed that the pressure of induction was worth doing it. But then his plan originally, it was winter, and he said, you know, I'm going to have a mattress in the back of the van, and I'm going to keep the van running the whole time she's in labor.
Just in case
we have to go. we're gonna make a mad dash, and we'll, you know, the van will already be warm, and, you know, we'll make it. And, you know, when it came down to it,
we're 20 minutes away from the nearest hospital, by the way.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Not a big deal. But when it came down to it, he really is an awesome support. And because
he
was so comfortable with home birth that he was able to be such a much better support, I think.
Yeah, he was. He didn't have
nervous about it when telling into it, but then when it started, it was like he was so comfortable, and it was like there wasn't people pressuring him, and he was, you know, it was so relaxed for him too.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say. There was no outside pressure on him to have to answer questions or keep somebody at bay. That he was totally in 110% in the birth zone. Yeah, at home, and he didn't. He was just all there. He was all there. Mm-hmm. And he was there at the hospital too. Like I said, I got my kisses for Elsa's birth and for every single contraction. Every single contraction, he never missed a beat.
Mm-hmm.
And but at home, he didn't have, you know, the apprehension of who's going to walk in the room next and what are they going to want.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was pretty cool.
Well, I am so grateful to you guys both for taking the time to hang out with me. I know you guys have a lot going on over there. So to take this time like you have is just so precious. And I know listeners are so grateful too, because there's just so much to this. Thank you again, both, so much. I mean, I have a feeling I'm going to get a lot of follow-up questions about this episode. So if when I do, I'm going to be reaching out to both of you to fill in any gaps, anything that I possibly did not cover, or just people curious about your story, which I could completely imagine there will be a lot of. Thank you guys so much again. Is there anything you'd just like to leave a final word with, either about the experience or to any moms out there, or, you know, Michael, for, you know, midwives out there, anything that you just like to leave listeners with?
I guess what I'd like to leave with people is, you can do this. God made your body to be able to do this. Your body was created to birth. And I've been told even in a coma, you know, women birth in a coma, your body is made to do this. It doesn't need even your help. It just, yeah, you can do this. Mm. And it's all good.
And, you know, I guess leaving someone with tidbits, I guess I just come back to thinking about my rant that I often do about not pulling on the placenta, but I already gave all those details earlier. but it's something that I just like really get into, but they can also, you know, find some of the info if they ever look me up on Facebook or whatever. And, you know, I post articles and things like that, so people can, I'm always posting things about not doing vaginal or cervical checks and
minimal intervention
and why you want a birth attendant. And, you know, I'm always posting about minimal intervention and those sorts of things. So if people ever want to look me up and find articles there, they can.
That's great. I'll include links so that people can find you. I'll put them with this show's notes on our website at dihpodcast.com. So I'll link it up there for people to find Michael and all the awesome resources that you share.
Cool.
Wow. Again, thank you guys so much. Appreciate you both, and just so much love up to you and warmth up there in northern Minnesota.
Well, thank you very much. We enjoyed, I think I can speak for both of us, we very much enjoyed sharing my/our story. And it's been wonderful to have the encouragement of you too. To let us put our story out there. Mm. Thank you.
Always gives me chills every time I just talk about this first.
Quick note about the Doing It at Home podcast. Matthew and I are not doctors or medical professionals, and nothing we say should be taken as medical advice or opinion. If you have medical or health-related questions, please take them to a trained professional. We're here simply to entertain you with stories and conversations about pregnancy, birth, and parenthood.
Does your father know you're listening to this podcast? Well, when you're done, why don't you stop by and check out a show that is 100% dad-approved, Dadages. Hi there. I'm Chad Higley. If you're looking for useful insights and practical advice you can actually apply to work, family, education, philanthropy, and just life in general, check out Dadages. That's Dadages, wherever you listen to your podcasts.